Bruchim Aboim B'Shem Hashem, Bershus Demar Da'asra Shalita, who is a big shutif in this and many other Harry H. Baron Asko Yukashra Shiurim. Just to give you an example of which may be of interest, the OU right now, we are in the middle of giving, I think it'll be a total of 7 Skype Shiurim to the Beis HaTalmud Koilil in Melbourne, Australia. We already did 3. And Mitchum has projected another 4. And our first speaker this afternoon just spoke at the Koil of Greater Boston. So just to give you an example, besides Lakewood, many of the Koilim that came from Beis Medrash Gavoya, the OU has a relationship with them. It's a great kavod for me to introduce our first speaker, Rav Nachum Rabinowitz Shlita, who besides being a Mayor D'Asra in Flatbush of a shul, he's also the senior rabbinic coordinator and wine expert at the OU, and he will speak about the production of kosher wine and grape juice. Rav Nachum.
Yashikayach Rav Grossman and Rav Grossman, for being serving as host and organizer of this wonderful shiurim. It's an opportunity, I guess, Shloshim Yom Lifnei HaChag, to talk about, it's a wonderful opportunity, Shloshim Yom Lifnei HaChag, we're not even a week before the Chag, to talk about Inyanim of the Chag. Obviously, grape juice, wine, play an important role. Arba Kaisis, Kiddush, particularly for the Yontif of Pesach. So we'll talk a little bit about wine, making grape juice. Wine and grape juice are standard ingredients today in many products, so it's not just for the Kiddush, which we obviously understand the sensitivity for, but in fact, I was just mentioning to Rav Moshe Elephant that there's a production going on right now in Argentina. There's a company called, I don't know if you've heard of it, Honest Tea, which make organic tea products, sweetened some of them with grape juice. And that's a Coca-Cola-owned company, and they're kosher. So we have now 13 individuals who are involved in a grape crush in Argentina because this is the season in the Southern Hemisphere for making grape juice. And we're involved with that. It's going to stop this week, and then it will continue after Pesach, Emirat Hashem. So I'd like to just share with you a little bit of, on a practical level, what goes on to making grape juice, making wine kosher. People make all kinds of assumptions about what does the OU do? How is it possible that the OU certifies Betty Crocker fruit roll-ups, which have grape juice? What are you relying on? What kind of kula? What kind of, all kinds of questions that come up. And so we'll talk about not so much the kulas, but I'm not aware of any particular kulas. I'll try to explain what is involved with the process. So we're starting here talking about pre-Hagefen, or reviewing halacha and technical issues of wine and grape juice. What's the makar for yayin nesach, or stam yenam, as we know it? So there's a Mishnah, Avodah Zarah, Elu Dvarim Shel Avdei Kochavim. These are the things, the objects of Avdei Kochavim, asurin, that they are osur. V'isurin isur hano, not just osur v'achil or shtia, but they're osur to benefit from. And the first of is hayayin, is wine. And then it continues, achoymet shalev dikachavim, shemit chilasa yayin, talks about vinegar. Vinegar stems from alcohol, and in the case, I guess, the most popular type of alcohol at the time was yayin. So if you have vinegar, which was derived from a non-Jew's wine, so that also is an iser, and it's an iser hanon. Now, the Gemara goes on and asks an interesting question. Yayin minolan. Where do we derive, from what pasuk do we derive this halacha? Now, this halacha is really, as we'll see, it's an iser d'rabbanan today. B'zman hazeh, it's not as if we're saying it's yayin of avodah zarah, that they actually used as takrivus of avodah zarah. They used it in the worship of avodah zarah. We're talking about something which is stam yayinam, which is just what a guy handled, what a guy used, or what it belongs to a guy. And the Gemara goes and derives it from a pasuk, amakra shechelev zvechemo yechelu, that they will eat from the fats of their sacrifices, yishtu yayin nesicham, and you'll drink of the nesichim that they used as I guess the word is libation that they used in the pouring for to worship their avodah zarah. Just as we have lahavdil elef alfei havdalos nisuch of yayin for the mizbeach, they also used to have a nisuch, a pouring, which was done in their worship. Now, the question that the Gemara asks about this is, why do we need a pasuk? If this is a nisuch drabanan, it says, for example, in the Gemara a little bit, a few dafim later, v'al'yena mishum b'naseyan. It says that the reason that we don't use their wine is because we may come to intermarry with them. So if that's the case, it's a nisuch drabanan egzera, why a pasuk? There's no reason for a pasuk. So the pasuk, Elamai, was talking about actual avodah zarah, takrevis avodah zarah. So the Rambam learns like the Gemara that those, that pasuk which we referenced before is the makar. But there's an interesting Ramban, and sort of this gives a little bit of a perspective of how the two are related. Many times when we see a gezeirah of Chazal, how do we look at it? We say there's a pasuk, there's a din in the Torah, and then there's siyogim. There are additional gezeirahs at Chazal. Why? Chazal foresaw a problem. They saw an issue at some other point, related or unrelated, and they made a gzera, they made a siyag in addition. But interestingly, the Ramban says that the makar for takrevis avodah zarah, that the iser to utilize or to benefit from anything which was used in the worship of avodah zarah, he says it's based on a pasuk in Kisisa. Pasuk says, "Pen tichres bris liyoshev haaretz," lest you make a covenant, an agreement with those who live, the Shiva Amamin who live in Eretz Yisrael, "Vizonu achrei Eloheim," that you will follow their gods, "Vizivchol Eloheim," you'll sacrifice to their gods, "Vakolacha," they'll call to you to join in their worship, "V'yachalta mizivchai," and you may come to eat from their sacrifices. So pen, the Ramban says, is always pen or yishomer, is a lav. So there's a lav in the Torah that says you shouldn't come to do this, you shouldn't come to sacrifice with them or eat even from the things that are used in the sacrifice of avodah zarah. But what's interesting, if you take a look at the pasuk immediately following that, it says in pasuk tazayin, "V'lakachta mibnaisav," if you'll do this, then you'll take their daughters levanecha for your sons for marriage. "V'zonu v'naisav achrei elihen," and then their daughters will lead your sons astray to serve their avodah zarah. "V'hiznu esbanecha achrei elihen." And Mela, what do you see? You see that it's not just, according to the Ramban, he's learning from this pasuk, it's not as if takrevis avodah zarah and b'nai sehen are two unrelated topics. They're very much related. In fact, you see the psukim, one follows the other. The idea of avodah zarah and the idea of mishum chasnus, we shouldn't come to marry them, are actually very much related, and the pasuk even mentions both together in the same breath. And interestingly, the Pirkei de Lezer, so there's a medrash that says who and at what time did the takana of Stam Yenam actually begin. So he says, it's nice Midyan. Amad Pinchas, Pinchas, we know who Pinchas is, v'charam al kol Yisrael beside Shem HaMefarish. He made a cherem, he made a gzera, and he did it with the Shem HaMefarish, which is very stringent, v'ksava nechtev al luchais. And I guess in an engraving, the way the luchos were written, both with the strength of the Beis Din Lamala and the Beis Din Lamata, that Jews are not allowed to partake in the wine of goyim, better to take even from the dirt from their under their feet rather than drink their wine. Shnemar, it says, he says, so we see the two are completely related. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen was the one who was Mesaken Stam Yenam, and the two are very much related. You come, like Bnei Spindyon did, what they did was they were Mezana with Klal Yisrael, and they caused them to serve Avodah Zarah. So it's not as if these are two unrelated topics. When we try to create a program today to do kosher grape juice, so one thing very important, you take a group of Shomer Shabbos, because that's our requirement. We have to have people are Shomer Shabbos. Mummer is a whole topic about what the status of a mummer b'zman hazeh, whether the tinoka shenishbur, whether they're considered mechal Shabbos for hesya. This is a long discussion. We're not going to get into that today. But certainly when giving hashkacha, and even, for example, the Binyan Tzion, who's famous, the Aruch Lener, who wrote the Binyan Tzion, who's famous for saying that the mechal Shabbos today are not Mechal Shabbos for Hesya, nonetheless, he says to be machmer with respect to wine, that we avoid their wine. Why? Because, I guess Rav Sternbach writes this, he says, even if you'll say that there's, you know, Mishum Ben Hasein, there's no issur to marry somebody, but the reality is, if we were to marry people who are not religious or not observant, so what happens is they're going to lead us astray as well. That's the same concept. That the same way we want to be shomer yahadus, to be shomer klal yisrael and tahara and kedusha of klal yisrael by not intermarrying with, you know, obviously we want to be mekarv these yidden, but at the same time, just to marry them, and therefore the yenam is also something that we avoid having yayin from those who are not who are mechallel Shabbos. So. One thing we share with the mashkichim who have to be shomer Shabbos, they don't have to be yirei shemayim l'rabim, they don't have to be tzaddikim gedolim, they have to be shomer Shabbos. So what we do is we insist on a letter from their rov, from their Orthodox rabbi that says that he's a shomer Shabbos. That's the worker. There's of course a person who oversees the whole production who has to be yirei shemayim l'rabim, has to be a machroi, a mashkiach. In Eretz Yisrael, they divided up into two classes. They call one a mashgiach, and one was called a neman kashrus. That's what the term is, it's used in Eretz Yisrael. And the idea being is that we need people who are erlich shomer Shabbos to do the work. Now, what we try to impart upon them, the seriousness, nature of what Stam Yenam is, so we share with them from the words of the Chacham Sadim, the Ben Ishchai mentions the same. He says that, Iser Zeshel Stam Yenam, he says, Avlo Pishu Kal Beinei Ha'olam, it's true that people sometimes think, big deal, it's something which is lenient. Why? V'dimula shar isa d'rabbanan, and it's like, maybe isa d'rabbanan, people don't think treat it that seriously. But emes, he says, isa chomer ma'oy, this is something which is very, very serious. V'ashoyse stam yenem oikir nishmasim v'makam shenishrush boy, that the neshama of a person comes from kedusha, it comes from a place of its where it's rooted, v'kedusha, and v'yayim ha'meshumer ba'anav, these are concepts in Kabbalah, I'm not going to even attempt to try to explain them, which I certainly don't understand. He says, v'ein l'chelik l'olam haba, such a person loses his chelik l'olam haba. And if you look a few lines further, he says, he quotes from a sefer called Yayin ha'meshumer, it says, kosur shekabbalah b'yodim, the mekubalim used to say that there's a Kabbalah that they have. Sha'ashoyse stam yenam, if a person drinks stam yenam, not perhaps, and not maybe, but yikoshel bivadai livol aramis. Such a person will be involved in an illicit relationship with a goy. So these are fighting words. These are very serious words, and that's what we try to share with them, that they should understand that if Klal Yisrael are relying on them to use this product, how serious it is for the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael that they take their jobs very seriously. I want to share with you a short video. It was made in near Cape Town in South Africa. I wish I had a better, clearer video, but it sort of gives an overview of what a winery looks like in action, a kosher winery. And Rabbi Meizels, who's the, the dayan of the Cape Town Beis Din, gives a little narration here as well. So if you can enjoy this video for a moment or two. Let's go on to the next. We're going to go through the process of making wine. And of course, it varies from winery to winery, from grape juice plant to grape juice plant. But this gives you a basic idea. Receiving of the grapes is the first. What happens in the field is not that much of interest to us, and we'll get a little bit into that because there's been a lot of discussion in Eretz Yisrael. There are some who are makbid to have Shomer Shabbos Yidden go out into the fields, and that does not happen in Chutz Laretz. The reasons for that, we don't have to get into, but I'll try to explain why it is in Chutz Laretz that we're not makbid on that. Except in extreme cases, which is not the norm, and that's something which is readily apparent come in to the winery. So the first step is when the grapes come in. Here's a picture of a large truck. It's filled with grapes, and it's a substantial truck. And what happens here is that the entire truck lifts up and dumps out its load into a bin. That's the first step of receiving grapes. Now, typically, there's no real shiloh when the grapes come in, but as we'll talk about when the sensitivity begins. The next step is destemming. Of course, when you make grapes and you make grape juice and wine, you don't want the bad negative flavors from the stems or from the leaves that are attached to the clusters of grapes. So you have a device, this is a device which removes those, and then you're left with just the grapes themselves. After that, you move on to the pressing. Here's a mashkiach standing in front of a contemporary type of a press. It's called a bladder press. What it does is you fill it with grapes, and then there's a large vinyl sort of sheet which presses against the grapes and causes the juice to separate from the grapes and from the skins. These are fermentation tanks. What happens, the way the Rebbeinu Shlom created grapes, they have natural yeast. And if you leave grape juice, once it's crushed, what happens is the yeast will start the fermentation of all the sugar, or most of the sugar, which is in the grapes and the grape juice, to turn into alcohol. That's what we call, when we say fermentation. Now, many people ask the question, how do you have sweet wine? If sugar turns into alcohol, so where's the sweetness? So there's a variety of reasons why you will have sweet wine. One example, if you're familiar, you've seen, for example, late harvest. Late harvest is wine which is left on the vines. It's grapes which are left on the vines till it's very, very sweet, overripened almost. And then the level of sugar is so high that even after you convert much of the sugar into alcohol, there's still what they call residual sugar. In fact, some of those bottles will even say the percentage of residual sugar which is left behind. Then there are other, sometimes they'll stop fermentation. Those are low alcohol types of wines. They stop the fermentation so that only a portion of the sugar is converted into alcohol. And of course, there are those wines where they have added sugar or added grape juice concentrate to sweeten the wine. We move on from there to aging. Any good wine is going to be aged for a considerable length of time. Some wines less, some more, but let's say typical for a good reserve wine would be a year to 18 months, maybe 24 months. Sometimes that's done in stainless steel tanks, sometimes it's done in barrels, such as these oak barrels. We have filtration. Filtration is interesting for koshering because it has to be cleaned out properly. Here's a picture of an open filter. As you can see, there's plenty of room in a filter for gook to get stuck in there. And before you start a kosher production, it's necessary to fully clean that out, to open it up, and so on. This is what a typical pasteurization is called, a tube and shell. That means that you have one tube which is carrying the juice through a larger tube which surrounds it, which has hot water, and that causes heat to be introduced into the product to lift up the temperature. And we'll describe the temperatures that the OU requires in order for wine to be considered mevushel. This is not the only type of a pasteurizer. There are other kinds, but this is a typical one which is used in a lot of applications. Finally, you end up with the bottling. The product, once it's complete, is ready to be put into the bottle, and this is a corker which closes the bottle, seals it. Okay, so when we start with grapes. Here's a person who's involved with wine who's standing next to a vineyard, and he's holding a cluster of grapes. Nothing could be more kosher than, I know there's discussions about teloyim. It's not considered muhsak b'teloyim. That's the OU's position. Yes, you should wash off your grapes when you buy them because of the pesticides and other reasons, but it's not something which is a concern, and you can go into your store, you can go pick out the grapes and enjoy them. It doesn't make a difference who handled them. No issues whatsoever. So what is the point where the sensitivity begins? The sensitivity begins when something called hamshacha takes place. Hamshacha means that there's a flow of juice separates it from the grape pulp. As the Shulchan Aruch describes it, me'emasai nikra yayin, at what point do we say that this is called wine? Le'osar b'maga ovdei kechavim, so that if a guy were to come into contact with it, he would asar it. It's now considered stam yenam, or yayin nesach bizman chazal. That's mishihischa limoshech. That's when the wine begins to flow. When it starts to flow in a press. Because the press is an incline. And here's a picture. This is from excavations in Eretz Yisrael. This is what a wine press used to look like. Essentially, it's a large pit and a lower pit. And there's a small canal which connects the two. What they did was they dumped the grapes into the upper pit, and they pressed on them to let the juice start flowing. And then the canal, through gravity, used to run down into this. That was the separation. This is basically the winemaking process of old. Yes, the fermentation was done perhaps in jugs after that, but this is basically the winery. Are those two pits. That's what it used to look like. And that's what you see Chazal describing, basically two pits. When you update that a little bit, you have a stone which is on top, and there was a stone on top of it which they used to grind the grapes with, and then you can see that there was a lower bucket sort of fashioned out of stone where the wine would drip down from the upper stone into the lower stone. Same idea, same concept. And this is more contemporary. This is probably a press of about 50 years ago, although you see them still around. This is a sort of a large basket, and on top there's a a large round head which comes down and presses the grapes. And because it's a basket with holes, the liquid can pour out from the sides and will be collected underneath. Here, I want to describe for you and show you why it is that we in Chutz La'aretz are not interested in what goes on in the field. Now, today, not all grapes, although the better grapes, if you go to France and Bordeaux, they're usually picking grapes by hand. And that happens by finer wines. There's a lot of the whole, you know, the way they grow them and the way they baby them and cultivate them is a whole art in itself. But also, when they pick them, they're very careful, they select them very carefully, they handle them, mamish, like halavai, we would treat our children the way they treat these grapes. That's what happens in the field. But industrial type of grape juice, they're not interested. And maybe in Argentina, where the labor is cheap, they'll use hand labor. But in America, they have machines that do the picking. So this is what a machine that's doing picking looks like. And, well... The sound might work, but the video's not working. So basically what you saw here, and maybe some of you were maybe shocked because you saw pouring of liquid. What happened there was the harvester picked the grapes out of the vines, and it loaded them up into the machine, and then it dumped them all out. And yes, when you dump and you have large amounts of grapes or large trucks of grapes, what you have is the weight of the grapes and the handling of the grapes is going to cause some juice to come out. But what happens here, as you see in this bin, is you have grapes sitting in liquid, and maybe temporarily for a second as it's pouring out, there was a separation, but immediately came back together. And the Poskim say that unless it's coming to a permanent separation, that's not hamshocha. Hamshocha means that you separate the juice from the grape completely, and so that it no longer joins. In this case, it never really separated. It's sitting in a pool of juice. So the fact is that even in these types of machines, our experience is that there's no real separation that takes place that we would consider to be hamshacha. And the reality is that when you get the grapes in, you can see, based on how they're coming in, you can see if there was a hamshacha or there wasn't a hamshacha. Therefore, we don't even bother going out into the fields because we don't feel it's necessary. You can see if there was separation. There are, for example, some trucks that have screens at the bottom and they actually collect the juice underneath. And that is a problem, because whenever you have juice which separates and is maintained, it's kept, that's a problem. If you have juice that separates and just falls out and under the truck and is just wasted, that's not hamshacha for kiyum, and that's also not a problem. So it's really only when you're separating to keep that juice that you have an issue of hamshacha. Okay, so when you receive the grapes, and I think this is one of the questions that I think we received, was what is necessary in terms of the dumping of the grapes into the bin. So the Shulchan Aruch says that Avit Kechavim, Shev Yanovim Besalim Bedardurim, he brings them into these large vessels, Bezorku Lagas, he throws them into the press, Shiesh Bayayin Daruch, where there is wine which already is being pressed, Mutter B'Dievet, that's Mutter, but he says when? B'Dievet. That means what? A goy, if he were to have thrown in the grapes into the press, that would be b'dieved mutter. That's not l'chatchila mutter. So the question is, who does the throwing of the grapes? The reality is that we try to have Yisrael, have our Shomer Shabbos workers do the throwing. And here's a picture from Argentina. And if you come this time of year to Argentina, sometimes in Mendoza, which is the grape growing area, you have temperatures of about 105 degrees. Now, not always our mashgichim and our workers are not people who are, blue-collar laborers. Sometimes they're more accustomed to being the base medrash than they are to being in working in 105 degree heat. Now, when you have a button you can press and a truck dumps out the grapes, that's not so bad. It's that they can manage to press a button. But in this case, this truck did not have a lift, and it was necessary to shovel out the grapes from the truck into the bin. And, you know, it's standing out in the heat for hours doing that is something. What we do in this case is we have the guy move the grapes from the back of the truck to the front of the truck, which is much of the work, but then the Yisrael does the last piece just to push it into the... Now, then the real question is, and the reality is, I don't know that a bin, as you see it here, is considered a gas. And we'll look into that a little bit further. Here's what the inside of a bin looks like in one particular place. You throw all the grapes in, and then the screw pushes the grapes onto the next process. Now, looking at this, why is this a gas? You just threw in grapes, and those grapes are going to move on. But if you take a closer look over here, you'll notice that underneath this screw, there's a screen. Those little holes are a screen. And what's happening is because of the weight of the grapes, you have juice which is actually flowing down. That is a hamshacha. So in this case, again, I don't know if it's called a gas and the gzera applies, but here we certainly have to be machmer because hamshacha is taking place in this type of a... But again, this is not necessarily common. It happens occasionally. We're especially careful in this case, but where there is no hamshacha, l'chayra, it's not necessary for the mashkichim to do it, but we nonetheless, we're mahadir to have the mashkichim doing that work as well. When you have, in many places, as we saw the earlier video, you have a forklift. Our workers are not necessarily trained to drive forklifts and certainly not insured and licensed to do that. So this is an example of where the guy drives the forklift, but the actual dumping is done by the Yisrael. Here's a small video. I guess the sound is also out, but it's fine. We don't need it. What you see is the mashgiach is standing, and he is operating the lever next to the guy. And he's dumping the grapes into this bin. And that's what we try to do in all cases.
The guy is pushing on the gas, but the yeast, the mashgiach, is operating the lever.
Okay. Once the product, for all the steps from here out, once Hamshacha takes place, everything has to be done Ayde Yisrael. As we'll see, Mag Akum certainly will answer. Even Koichai Shal Akum, as we'll see, we'll describe exactly what that is, would, you know, it puts into question the whole product. And, you know, from here out, every step, every last movement of the product is all done by Shomer Shabbos Yidden. Now, once the product is in a sealed vessel, such as the Shulchan Aruch describes, Hever Ovid Gechav Noit Shel Yayin Makom L'Makom, if he's carrying like one of these vessels that they would carry wine in, V'Oiches Pianoit Biyodo, even he's holding the mouth of the vessel, Ben Shoyanoit Molei Choser, whether it was completely full or not, Mutter, so that wine is permitted, V'Al Pishayam Isnadin Shein Derech Nisuch Bekach. He says just to carry a vessel of wine is not an issue because that's not nisuch. The Shach explains he's holding pianoid, hainushu sasum, that it's sealed. Once you have a vessel which is sealed, so the fact that the guy, if you have wine and you go to a wine store and there's a guy who's stocking the shelves, that's not an issue because those are closed vessels. Here, when the mashgiach leaves, you're going to see every single inlet, outlet to a tank is going to be sealed with tape and a signature of the mashgiach. Here are hoses. You'll notice that at each hose there are seals because whenever the mashgiach goes away from a vessel, it always has to be sealed up. This is what a closer look at a seal with a signature of a mashgiach on it. And of course, if you have a barrel such as this, you'll notice also we have tape and we have signatures of the mashgiach on it. And of course, a closed bottle has its chasimus on it as well. Maga. What is considered maga? Maga means that the guy actually comes into physical contact with the wine. Now that's, as in the red, shi'iga b'yaday or b'raglay. He touches the wine, whether with his hand, whether with his feet. V'yashom d'naga b'raglay, and oyser b'nodin, derech nisav v'kach, others. The Rambam mentions, say that Baraglo is not considered Nisuch. Abedavar Acher, or if he's using something else, we hold, we're machmer, that any way that he touches it, whether he touches it by directly with his hand, or whether by extension, if he holds something, which then, if he, let's say, they have these mixing vessels or spoons, or he's adding something to it, anytime he comes into contact, that almost invariably will aser the wine completely. That's maga. There's something called koichai, which is a little bit less. That's, for example, if someone opens or closes a valve. That means the valve would move the product from tank A through a hose, through a pump, to the next tank. So that's koicha. That means his force is causing the wine to move. If, for example, if a guy were to take a bottle and to pour it, that's koicha, because once again, he's not physically touching it, but he's causing the movement of the wine. So not levet kachavim kli shel yain v'igbiya v'yotza yain. If wine comes out because he's holding it, because he's moving it, afa pi shel shichshech, even if he doesn't splash it, nasa b'shtia, we still say that it's aser. Sharayin bami koichai. That's what the Shulchan Aruch describes as koichai. And he says, interesting, mashinisha bekli aser gamkein misham nitzak. There's a special chumrah. Stam yenim has its kulas, but it has a special chumrah also that's called nitzak. Nitzak means that if you pour, or if you, let's say, for example, you have a cup, and this is, you have tastings, wine tastings. And if the wine tastings are taking place with non-mevushal wine, so what happens is you have a Shomer Shabbos person who stands, he holds the bottle, but you have to make sure that you don't pour it into a cup which was used by a non-Shomer Shabbos or by a goy. Because if you merely pour it into his cup, what he's holding, is already usser. So nitzuk means that we sort of take the isser backwards through the flow that's coming from the bottle. It goes back from his cup back into the bottle. The whole bottle that he's pouring from becomes usser. So it's a special chumrah that we have by nitzuk. Now we'll talk a little bit about yain mevushal. So yain mevushal, we know that if a guy is misnasech yain, so then of course it's takrovis of avodah, which is usher. That's real yain nesach. However, the Shulchan Aruch says, or the Rambam says it. He says shiroi lahakav al gavim mizbech. The only type that we say is usher is that type of a wine that's fitting to be used on the mizbech. Mipnezek shegozvel stam yainim vegozvel kol yain sheyiga boy. Shia Aser, when Chazal made their gzera, which was closely associated with the Isser of Yain Nesach, and both Isser and Isser Hanoya, Lagozu El Al Yain Aroyus Nesach, only things which are Roy. In those days, if you have Yain which was cooked, so Eino Aser Mutal Lishtoy Simakam Bekoisecha, then you would be able to drink together with the guy even from one cup, because it's considered Eino Roy Lemizbech. Interestingly, the Shulchan Aruch just says, defines what is mevushal, mishir siach agavei esh, once it came to be cooked on a fire. And we'll see how we define that today with modern cooking. The interesting that the Rosh asks a kasha. The Rosh asks, he says, davar tamua. I understand, why are you comparing yain nesach with stam yainam? Kiman shegozrel yainam mishum b'nesen. So if they're saying that the isser of drinking wine is because, you know, the social context that's created when you drink together with a goya, that brings the chasnas. So if that's the case, so the fact that this is yain mevushal, so therefore what? You're not going to marry the person? Well, why does that change anything? That's the Rosh's kasha. So the Rosh actually says something after, which we'll see may have relevance in the last sentence, in a motzei kol kach, since yain mevushal is something which is not shchiach. So maybe you're right. The reason, the rationale that's used for yain nesach doesn't apply over here. But nonetheless, since it's lo shchiach, who makes yain mevushal? So therefore, legozer bay. I mean, the reality is that it's possible, like, you know, for example, when we started, that the gzera was really, and the psukim actually tied together stam yainim with yain nesach. So pshat is that it's really the same, it comes from the same isser. It comes from the same isser. It's only shayach to make the isser on the same things that, because it's all avodah zarah and znus is really the same thing together, like the Pirkei Reblezer said. If that's the case, then there's no reason to be mavdil between one or the other. That's just a svara. But this is the Rosh, famous Rosh's kasha. Rav Moshe and his tshuva defines yain mevushal, and he says, Pashut shu yad soledes. He says that when you define what is mevushal, what temperature do you need to cook it up to? He says you need yad soledes. You need to cook it up until, you know, the yad soledes, which we're familiar with from Hilchos Shabbos. And he says, Af shalei mala resichus, even though it doesn't bubble up like a boiled product, why the yad soledes? Ubechshivas bishul chaldinim b'davar lach. When it comes to liquids, we say yatzah lettuce is mevushal. That's the definition of mevushal. Just like Hilchas Shabbos, to be mevushal something is yatzah lettuce. You don't wait until it's boiling. The same is true over here. This is Rav Moshe's position. He actually mentions a number. He says be'erech kuf ayin hey malis l'chumra. He says it should be 175. Now we all know, when it comes to Hilchas Shabbos, we're much more machmer. We're concerned about temperatures of about 120 degrees, 118 degrees. Famously, the Shmir Shabbos Kolchosa talks about not less than 45 degrees Celsius, which is about that, about 116 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's interesting where Reb Shlomo Zalman got that number from. I understand that when he was in Gaman, he used to sit with Rav Bengis, who was the Rav of the Eid HaChredis in Yerushalayim, and Dr. Wallach, who was famously the founder of Shari Tzedek Hospital, came, and he was discussing a shaila with Rav Bengis, and he asked about, they had a refus bucker, they had cows by the hospital which provided milk for the patients in the hospital. And he had a Hilchas Shabbos question because one of the cows was sick. So as they're sitting there, Shlomo Zalman asks him, he's always a very curious person, always interested, he said, how do you know that the cow is sick? So Dr. Wallach said, because it has a fever. He says, what's the normal temperature of a cow that you know that it has fever? So Dr. Wallach said, the cow is similar to human temperature. So I guess 98.6. And if it's higher than that, you know that the animal is sick. So Shlomo Zalman immediately asked him a question. He says, I want to know, amongst all animals or birds that you shecht, he says, what is the hottest temperature of such an animal? So they came out, there was a, I can think it was a duck or a goose, was the hottest temperature. And what is the normal body temperature of a goose? I think it was 45 degrees centigrade. So Shlomo Zalman said, since the Gemara in Chulin says that the sakin shechita is not usser because of blias, so it must be that the blood coming out of a goose, as it's shechted, cannot be yatzah lettuce. So he says, I don't know what the temperature is, but it's certainly not 45 degrees. It has to be higher than that. So that's why the Shmir Shabbos Kolchosa came out with the 45 degree number. But again, the reality is it's a range. And the truth is it's different for every person. It's different for every type of product. Davar lach is different than davar yovesh when it comes to yatzah lettuce. So it's a range, let's say, from 118 through, let's say, Rav Moshe is 175 degrees. But when you want to prepare wine that's considered mevushal, choladeus, obviously you have to take the higher range. When it comes to Hilchas Shabbos, you want to be machmer for the lowest end of the range. So that's just how this psak comes out. There's a tshuva which is quoted from Rav Yashiv, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And what he says over here is something interesting. He says, if it's true that most wine is pasteurized. I don't know who gave him this information, honestly. It's not true. Most wine in the world is not mevushal. Many kosher wines are mevushal, but you will not find any non-kosher wine kemat. Maybe there's some strange exception, but you'll never find wine typically that's not kosher that's mevushal. The only reason to be mevushal wine preserves itself because of the alcohol. So the only reason to pasteurize product like milk or juice is because it spoils. Wine doesn't need that. So the only reason to do it would be because you want to create a situation where it's yain mevushal. So in any case, that's what he says. He says, if that were the true, he says, if that's the standard practice, why? Because he quotes the Rosh. He says, milsa de leshchicha is legazru. But he says, if standard wine is mevushal, is pasteurized, he says, who says that that's milsa de leshchicha? Again, I don't know. I mean, one of, I guess, a hakira you could ask is, are we interested in Jewish wine b'chalal? If the whole reason is mishum chasnas, you're really looking at what's out in the market. You're looking at what's by the goyim, not what's doing by the Eden. The fact that this changes, I guess, I don't know. The metzias that he's quoting, I think, is one that one could question. Another question that comes up very frequently is the question of yain mazug. Many people, Rahman Latzlan, have illnesses, diabetes and the like, that they have difficulty drinking not just wine, but even grape juice. And if they need to drink for the abacosis, they can't, maybe during the year they used challah or matzah to make kiddush, but the abacosis is something that everyone has to take. So what you do is you dilute the wine or you dilute the grape juice. So what is the shear for that? So it's famously the Shulchan Aruch says, the yenish shalonu, he says that maybe, Bizman Chazal, wine was very strong, and it was common practice to be meizik, to dilute it with water. But Yain Shalom she'en chazokim kol kach, he says the Shulchan Aruch, nowadays we don't have that type of wine, and certainly we don't have that today. He says, afilu rama tlosa v'yosa arba, even if you have 3/4 of water, enim l'varach ala bar priya gafen. So the Shulchan Aruch says you wouldn't make a bar priya gafen on that. Now, what does the Shulchan Aruch say is the shear? So the primigodim, and it seems, I think the Kaf HaChaim say, the shear would be roiv. You have to have at least 51% grape in order for this to be considered a din of yayin, whether it's grape juice or whether it's yayin. I'm not going to get involved in whether grape juice can be used for avakaisis. There's a discussion in Achrayim about that, whether it has to be meshaker, it doesn't have to be meshaker. But assuming, I think the Kabbalah of most paiskim is that the grape juice can be used for avakaisis and for yayin, for kiddush. But nonetheless, the way that Shulchan Aruch says it, you would need to have roiv. Now, lately, I've been getting a lot of questions. I don't know, this is one of the things that comes up every year or two and it keeps coming back. And a lot of the Sfardish Rabbanim are calling up to find out what is the situation with wine and grape juice. And all kinds of irurim about wine and grape juice. And just the other day, I had a conversation with Rav Fayish Herzog, who's one of the principals of Kedem. And he assures me that this is not even close. The standard Kedem grape juice product is 85% straight single strength juice. It has 15% perhaps a mixture of concentrate and water, but that's a minority. So even according to the Shulchan Aruch, there should not be any issue. We'll get a little bit later into discussing what the product they have called light grape juice, which is, if you notice, it doesn't even say grape juice, it says grape juice beverage. That's because of FDA labeling requirements, and we'll describe that as we get into the next slide. Mirtz Hashem. But if you look in the Ramah for Ashkenazim, it's certainly a lot more kal. The Ramah says, "Bevachli hayayin echad mishishu b'mayim." As long as you have not less than one part wine to 5 parts of water, it's not less than 20%, then you're fine. Because he says that that's enough to be considered yain mazik. Wine is something that the Rav Shlomo Zalman questions whether this applies to grape juice. Could be the whole din of meziga is only din by yain. It doesn't apply to, yes, it's true that yain megitoy is something which can be used for kiddush grape juice, which is not fermented. But as far as yain mazik, perhaps not. But in terms of wine, the Ashkenazim have it a lot easier in this respect. I think we did this one already. Are we going backwards? Okay. There's a question about grape juice concentrate. How do you treat grape juice concentrate? And there's a famous tshuva in the Menachas Shlomim from Shlomo Zalman where he says like this. He says, La'achar shenisbashel. If you take the wine and when you concentrate, what you're doing is you're cooking it up and you're removing the water from the juice. So you're left with a sort of a syrupy, very thick, high sugar juice concentrate. So shenizbashel kol kach harbe ad shenishar rak tamtzis shel echad mechamisha, which is approximately 1/5, which is the volume is now 1/5 of what it was. So he says ein roi klal lishtia. He says you can't drink this. And the way he shaita choshvani shuposel lekiddush. Rav Shlomo Zalman says lechayra, since it's not roi for shtia, it's not, you can't make kiddush on it. So he says v'im kain, he questions minayin lanu shechayzel achsheroi aydei asafas mayim. Who says that the fact that you reconstitute it by putting water back into it, who says that that changes it back into wine? This is Rav Shlomo Zalman's position, and apparently these Sfardish Rabbanim have been calling me, are concerned about it as well. Apparently, I think Rav Avad Yosef also says the same, that you cannot consider reconstituted wine to be considered wine. And Mamela, let's talk about the light grape juice from Kedem. Light grape juice from Kedem, while it has a roiv of grape product in it, even though it has aspartame and water added to it, it does have roiv grape. So the chayr, there's no issue, but they do have an issue with it. And the reason they would have an issue is because some of that grape to make the roiv is a concentrated grape. And if Rav Shlomo Zalman is saying that you're questioning, and Rav Shlomo Zalman doesn't say bevadois, but he says he wonders whether it's good. So he says that product, if you can take the water out and you take the aspartame out, and you take the aspartame is very tiny, but if you take the grape juice concentrate out, Rav Shlomo Zalman says maybe that's not considered yain, and you only can consider the single strength juice as the wine, so then l'chayra, that when you have less than 50%. So for Sfardin, that might be an issue. Again, you know, for someone who's a chayla, ask your Rav what to do. Rebelsky in a Masorah magazine, that's the OU's Torah magazine that they put out, brought a raya from a Tosfos, not like Shlomo Zalman. And the Tosfos talks about when you have wine which is yavish, dried out wine, and it's about the Isser of Haitzah carrying it out on Shabbos. So it says if you have a kezias of yain yavish, that's considered choshev. So Tosfos says, why? Because he says, Mishum derviyas yain misyabish at shaymid al kezias. Because wine, the shear of Haitzah would be a revius. When you dry out the revius, you end up with a kezias of yain yavish. And it says, "L'chein kezayis yon yesh b'shir chashav leitzah ha'il v'yesh b'yodid la'arv b'maim l'achzir l'revius." Tosfos say clearly, why? Because you can reconstitute it. So Tosfos is saying that it's considered wine. And he says, then, v'roy oz l'kai shel bracha. And Tosfos says, beferish these words, then you can use it for kai shel bracha. You can use it. So he's bringing a raya from Tosfos that he would consider it, even certainly if he's considering something like a dry wine, and reconstituted to be yain, certainly a concentrated wine, which is still in a liquid form, should be considered like wine. As an appreciation to those who are moisa nefesh, not just in this, but certainly in this, to do kashrus, when, getting from the grapes which are in the vineyard and moving it into a bottle and the cup that we drink and make kiddush and do all the mitzvahs with, the bris milah and the sheva brachas and so on, brachas hamazon, that requires mesiras nefesh on the part. For some reason, the Eibishter made it that the grape season always falls out Yantiv time. In southern hemisphere, it's Pesach. And in the northern hemisphere, it always falls out Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot. And you have, in every place that we're making kosher grape juice or kosher wine, you have not just one, but a team of people who are spending sometimes Shabbos and sometimes even Yom Tovim away from their families. The OU is giving hashgacha and wine in basically every wine region in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, in New York State, we're giving in, interestingly, in Virginia. We're doing wine in Virginia. We're doing, of course, in California. We're doing it in Oregon, and we're doing it in Washington State. We're doing it in France and in Spain and in Italy. And where else will? We have in Hungary, we did productions. We do in Australia, on both coasts of Australia. We have wine which is being made in South Africa, wine which is made in Argentina, and wine which is made in Chile, wine which is made, was at one point in Georgia. Georgia, not the state of the United States, but the former Soviet Republic. That's basically a shkoyach to everyone for coming, learning a little bit about grape juice and wine, and yeah, shkoyach especially to those who are moisa nefesh to make sure that we have kosher grape juice and wine. Shkoyach.